All right, Casey, how's it going tonight? We doing okay? It's snowy in South Carolina.
It is. It is.
You got any of that white powder flying from the sky?
We did, and my kid is 8 years old, as I've talked about before, and I think he's probably outside currently, like on that last piece of snow with his snow boots on and snow pants on, just like eating it all up until it goes away. But it's been pretty much gone here towards the coast. I know the upstate and the Midlands of South Carolina got it a little harder, a little tougher than we did down here.
Absolutely. And since we were last together, last weekend we had ice in South Carolina. This weekend we have snow in South Carolina. There's been several days of SEC basketball. Things pretty much stayed status quo in terms of how you would expect them to happen, other than Florida really breaking out in the middle of the week with a record-setting performance, 95-48 over South Carolina in Columbia. And then yesterday we had a few things happening as well. Texas A&M takes down Georgia in an important game as that SEC race continues. Vanderbilt continues to take care of business, 71-68 over Ole Miss. Kentucky goes to Arkansas, where the Razorbacks have been really, really good, and get some 85-77. Kentucky is such an interesting team this year. And then Tennessee able to take care of Auburn. A little bit of up and down start for Stephen Pearl's tenure. And then today, you will hear later from David Soderquist. We actually recorded with him live this afternoon to talk about the Florida basketball program and the Florida football program as we move through the offseason. And we were recording in the middle of this game, and so I'm giving live updates there, but I'll go ahead and spoil it in case you haven't caught the score. 100-77, Florida beats Alabama. More on that one with the addition of Charles Bediako and a guarantee from Todd Golden that they would, quote, beat them anyways. All right, so we'll get to that here in just a little bit, but those are the SEC men's basketball scores of the week. That race continues to be wide open as we march on, pun fully intended, towards the SEC tournament and then the NCAA tournament. It's February 1st, and that means we're right in the thick of basketball season. Don't let it sneak up and surprise you, because March Madness is right around the corner.
Did you see Olivier Rieu, the 7'9" wonder, came off the bench and scored for Florida tonight? That was awesome. I think they are, maybe it's recency bias because I watched that game today. Man, top to bottom, they are really good again.
They are.
They started a little slow, and then they slowly started to build. So I think Todd Golden's got them cooking.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. And I've said this all year. Earlier in the year against Duke, you could tell that they were missing the guards. But Xavier Lee and Boogie Flan have made up enough of the gap, but I think they've shifted to play that game through some of their bigs. Thomas Houck is really the best player on the team, in my opinion. And if they can work through him and he can continue to become a number one, I think that they can really have some success down the stretch. But it has been everybody. That's the thing, though. Everybody's been a little up and down across the league. Mm-hmm. And if we're not careful, we've kind of gotten lulled to sleep into not knowing who is that good, who's not good, as we make our way into tournament time. And then we're going to be filling out brackets. And you better know what you're doing by the time we get there.
Real quick, like, Tennessee's had a good week. Obviously, they knocked off Alabama last weekend. They knocked off my Dogs in a midweek game. That was a really good overtime game. That was one of the very exciting ones. Did you catch what he said in his press conference yesterday? He said, sometimes I wonder if my guys are betting on games.
Well, because he was talking about the passing, and then he covered his eyes. Now, everyone, I think, on this show knows that I am a stand for Rick Barnes. I love that man more than my dog. I don't know. See, he makes you say weird things. That's just who Rick Barnes is. He covered his eyes. He said he erased that. You know, he did the whole thing. But Tennessee's coming into form, though, Craig. They are. They finally have a little bit of an identity. They know what they are. And, I mean, Rick Barnes will get you to the Sweet 16 just about every year. It's just trying to win this daggum thing. He's only been coaching for 100.
I know. And that was the thing. Like, Georgia came in last week. They were, like, number one, averaging over 90 points a game. But one of the things that you've seen since the start of, like, SEC play is Georgia wants to get out and they want to run. They want to go fast. They're averaging 17 points in transition. Now, they're averaging less than 10. And what have you seen? Them go 0-3 in their last three games. Now, the midweek game against Tennessee was great. For whatever reason, they needed to hit a three at the end. Instead, the guy decided to drive to the bucket, hit a two, so they only lose by one. I guess it looks better on the scoreboard.
Gambling. Yeah, it's just boneheaded. Boneheaded mistake.
Oh, it's rough. I was talking with John a little bit after that game. I was just like, man, what are you doing? Except I was probably a little more colorful language than that, but we will keep this PG for the kiddies.
A family show.
Right, family show.
Something like that. Okay.
Did you want to talk about the Q's Boston game, or do you want to wait?
Yeah, it was. Those are definitely SEC teams and definitely an SEC sport for sure, Craig. No, the flip side of your Georgia game this weekend was that Buckyball and Texas A&M continue to be one of those consistent challengers in this SEC race. And I'm really interested to see how that continues to shake out as well. There's just so many moving parts and pieces. Who is Auburn going to be? Who is Kentucky going to be? Who is Rick Barnes in Tennessee going to be? Buckyball and Texas A&M. Georgia has shown some promise. Vanderbilt continues to be one of the most consistent teams there. I know I'm probably missing somebody as we go down this list because I'm not actually looking at it. I'm just kind of spouting Alabama. Things off. Oh, Florida and Alabama. We just talked about from today. The first SEC men's basketball game on a Sunday since the 2017-2018 season. Thank you, SEC, for finally giving us something that we appreciate and not putting two East Coast teams in a 9 o'clock p.m. tip-off slot. Can't figure that one out yet either. Okay.
Can I give you a little piece of information that nobody wanted to know that I thought was interesting yesterday?
That is absolutely what we're here for.
All right. Auburn's top assistant and probably Bruce Pearl's scapegoat when he got in trouble all those years ago at Auburn, Ira Bowman, is what played for Rick Barnes at Providence 100 years ago. My brother graduated high school with Ira Bowman.
Look at the tie-ins.
Didn't here he, I was, here didn't I was he have some legal that, trouble when Bruce got fired?
That's what he just said.
That's what I mean.
He took the brunt of all of that.
Yeah, he's a fog. Yeah, but listen, you know what he learned? He watched Goodfellas, great Christmas movie, by the way. And what do you learn? You don't rat on your friends.
That's it.
And he did.
He jumped on the grenade.
The Pearls being in Knoxville before Auburn was the clear tie-in, but who knew in that game? It was actually Ira Bowman and Rick Barnes. There you go.
I told you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, let's do some boards, shall we? It just means more genius, brought to you by our friend MBG, who provides the board for us every week and presented right here by Casey Cregan. All righty. Let's jump in and see what we've got this week.
Ooh, I can't wait. MBG says Ole Miss should sue Dabo for slander. Hashtag sue everybody.
Pick up right where we left off.
K. Austin says, what happens if Dabo doesn't have proof? So all this talk of investigation and Dabo, quote, having proof, let's say no proof is found. Shouldn't Dabo be punished or even sued for slander? I'm very interested to see how all of this plays out. Now, before you guys make a comment on this, the best place for legal advice is the message boards. So what say you to aspiring lawyers?
Always go into the message boards. You know, there's a lot of lawyers coming out of Oxford, and so their message board is actually probably one of the more prominent places to look for legal advice because they have so many lawyers in that system. So that makes a lot of sense, Casey. Thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, you know, this is classic message board grasping for straws, I think, right? Where we're going to take it on the chin a little bit. You said it last week, and I think if we look at this realistically, this has nothing to do with Ole Miss. This whole conundrum, they're getting caught in the crosshairs of everybody talking about tampering, and we went into 101, 201, 301, whatever 01 we want to classify this as. There's tampering happening everywhere, and we even saw Pete Golding doubles down this week and goes after and gets a couple more. So maybe he's okay making it about Ole Miss. I don't know that there's a slander case here though, boys.
I just like this is a VIP post, so obviously there's a legal correlation there because it's a VIP post. So, you know, I had to Google the difference between libel and slander. I was just making sure we're using the right terminology, right?
Fine line. Two things. Did you? If anyone watched the press conference, Dabo had to the minute of when these text messages were coming in, where everybody was. So I'm sorry, Kay Austin. I don't think he lacks receipts in this. And two, Oxford, among many other places, got hit really hard with this. So I just want to send our thoughts out to Oxford, Mississippi. I know those students were sent home. They're not even going to start class for another week. So hope everyone's all right down there.
We reached out to our friends of the show, Miss Evie and David Walker. They reported back earlier this week that they were both doing well. So thoughts are with you too, both you guys and everybody in Rebel Nation.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun when there's some snow to play in. Not a lot of fun when there's power outages and property damages and people start getting hurt relatively quickly. So I agree. I echo what you guys had to say there. All right, we talked about the Pearls. Let's continue that. Yes. Let's continue that theme.
All right, MBG says, imagine Bruce Pearl at Kentucky with $22 million. Our friend Anon, 1759768907. Why Anon? It must be it. Anyway, imagine Bruce Pearl. Did I just say that already? At UK with $22 million. He says, we would have Stokes, Holt, and likely a all-SEC player too.
Is it an SEC or is it a SEC player?
Could be a SEC player because
somewhere in there with that $22 million, this user may also be able to learn that there needs to be that you use the article "an" before a word starting with a vowel,
It's like a chef.
Bugs me.
It's like a chef when you're out at a restaurant. You know, you don't change when you're at a 5-star restaurant. Don't change the parsley. You know, don't say I don't want the asparagus. I want the. Can I have French fries instead? Like, you don't do that. But with a message board poster, same idea, you know? Anon wants it to be A.
Yep. Okay. Got it. Didn't realize that was a 5-star message board. But now that you've cleared it up for me, that's great. You know, this Bruce Pearl thing, before we speak on it, we have another one actually in the same
thing. Oh, is there another one? Oh.
Oh. Message MPG says South Carolina needs to make Bruce Pearl say no. Our friend SC Mark 01, probably a listener of Chief Sports Network, at least I hope so, says, Bruce Pearl, please go make him say no. 10 years, $100 million guaranteed. Just effing do it. He'll be 75 when he's done. And yeah, he's an ambassador for Auburn. Who gives a crap? Yeah, his son is the coach there now. Who cares? Patino just beat his son for 900th win, and Patino was 80. Will he say no? Probably. But give him anything he wants. I love how he ends this with, will he say no? Probably.
So you're telling me there's a chance. So you're saying there's a chance.
Make him say no.
I don't totally hate this argument, not just from Kentucky or South Carolina or anywhere. Any program that feels like they need to go get a coach, I don't know that I wouldn't call Bruce Pearl because the odds are that he is going to say no, but – Does anybody have a definitive answer? This is a genuine question for anybody out there listening or either of you two. If anybody's got a source, can we get this confirmed? Does anybody know if Bruce Pearl has said on the record he's never coming back?
I think he was just trying to avoid any sort of issues at Auburn, so he passed it on to Steven. So might as well get out while the getting's good. Head to Gamecock land. They're going from Under Armour to Nike. It's a good transition. He's won at Tennessee. He's won at Auburn. Go get your own cock-caboose in the contract and go win.
Well, the other thing that sticks out to me here, too, is that we had a Kentucky board included in this as well. And, Craig, we can make an argument for South Carolina giving him a call because the South Carolina basketball program is not in a great spot right now. Let's try to put it as politely as possible. I'm not sure
they need Casey to go to more games.
Throw a ton of dirt on it, but yeah, Casey's the good luck charm. But outside of when Casey has been there, it's not been great in the SEC. So, you know, you can make an argument for a program that's struggling. Kentucky, on the other hand, we've discussed here in weeks past in our basketball segments and in our message board segments because we've talked about the expectations in Lexington being set at maybe an unrealistic mark. And then you have Mark Pope coming in there and trying to be perfect in a world where they just fired Mark Stoops and they're coming off of a bad football season and everybody's like, let's rely on basketball. And then it's not exactly perfect. I think that the NCAA tournament is huge for Pope and this Kentucky team because they've been so up and down during the season. they're turning a lot more quickly in this college athletics landscape this day and age than they used to. And if you don't pacify people very, very quickly, that instant gratification tends to kind of well up in the form of a buyout.
It doesn't seem like they're happy with Pope, though. It seems like
no.
since the start, but it seems like since the start of the year, and he's brought heat on himself, as we've talked about. But like, it just does, just seems to be a general discontent with Mark Pope in general. So to me, it's like, if I'm Kentucky, I'm going to make that call. Why not make another big splash? Yeah, Will Stein going to do some things? Go call Bruce Pearl.
Is Bruce Pearl the Urban Meyer of college basketball, though, or will he become?
That's a great question. I think that he might be. That's a fantastic.
That is
fantastic comparison it to is. Draw I, that. If what if he doesn't come back, then he really is Urban Meyer.
Yeah, but I really I
or John
Gruden. for all the slander we could throw at Bruce if we wanted to. I do love the energy that he brings to like the fan bases, especially like when he is going out and supporting the women's basketball team and like painting his body and just going out. And we did that at Tennessee. He's done that at Auburn. He's rejuvenated Auburn. I don't see, you know, why not? Come on, South Carolina. Come on, Kentucky. Let's get it done.
South Carolina has had some legendary coaches come in, no doubt.
Frank Martin.
When it comes
baseball,
to the
heart to football,
why not? I was going to say it's kind of the South basketball. Carolina MO. It's kind of the South Carolina MO to have this need for a savior. And it began in the form of Lou Holtz. And then you had Steve Spurrier. And then, of course, you had Paul Mainieri coming in for the baseball program heading into year two with hopefully a little better outlook than what they had in year one. Already some injuries on that baseball front, but it's not quite baseball time for us here on SEC Sunday night yet. But yeah, I mean, South Carolina has had some coaches that have done really big things in the past, national championship winning coaches coming into other sports. So is it time to bring somebody into the basketball program that has that type of resume? Maybe so. Okay. Let's move on. Let's see what I haven't grabbed here. There we go.
All right.
This is a great one right here.
MBG says Mississippi State equals the Harvard of Mississippi. Oh, man. Why can't I? Oh, there it is. Our friend Voo Dude says Mississippi State equals the Harvard of Mississippi. Mississippi State has 77% acceptance rate. Compare that to Ole Miss with a 99% acceptance rate. Why is this? So obviously,
probably it's straight much facts. Harder. Do you think this is straight facts from like the Ole Miss and Mississippi State admissions office?
Yeah,
you need to speak on this, Casey. You have more experience in Starkville than we do.
Starkville's just a little bit more selective. That's all. You know, it's beautiful. The Courtyard Marriott, not a sponsor of this show, is a wonderful hotel, and it's close enough. The dude
is that the Mills? Is that the big one? The big
yeah, mill? By the Mills, right yeah. there by the Mills. Yeah, beautiful. They have. What's his name? Shipley's Donuts right off campus. They have wonderful dairy. It's an A&M. It's an agriculture school, so they have wonderful dairy and ice cream.
Sounds. They got like a couple of good places in the Cotton District to
Bulldog Burger, Three Brothers.
When I think Harvard, I also think agricultural school with good ice cream. Starkville. So that's a good comparison.
Well, does that mean Ole Miss is Yale?
Who doesn't like ice cream?
Rob. Rob's probably like, oh, I need like zero sugar, Zevia-based ice cream.
I just do the avocado ice cream because that's what Tommy does.
I have extra, extra sweet tea. He's got sugar-free.
Look at you. That is not sugar-free. That is the opposite of your zero sugar Dr. Pepper.
I'm not all going right. to bed for 3 days. Starkville is beautiful. I've never been to Oxford. I hope to get there.
We got one for
both. Been to both, enjoyed both. Would still pick Oxford just because
you're a jerk. MBG says, bring Deshaun Watson back to Clemson. Really true friend of mine, Clemson underscore Tiger 29678 says, DW4 returning to Clemson with the Bediako stuff at Alabama. It feels almost right for DW4 to make a return to Clemson. His NFL days are behind him. Let's bring him back this year. We need a quarterback. He needs a job. Why not? I mean, as a Clemson guy, this just makes way too much sense. Does he win the job over Chris Vezina, though? That's a good question.
You know what I want to know? This is a complete joke of a post, and I totally get that.
No, it's an assistant coach with Clemson. That's what it says on the board.
But
Chad Morris.
If Charles Bediako can come back and play for Alabama, as we have seen he is doing, we now have a player who played in actual NBA games who is challenging to try to come back. Yes. What is the slope? Are we on the slope where this board becomes not so much of a joke?
That's the scary thing, Rob, is that things like this seem like it's a joke, but then watch things start to happen, and then we look at this back at this post going, wow, maybe not Deshaun Watson, but you know, some guy that tried to leave early, got hurt or something, comes back.
Do you need like a South Carolina judge?
Who are we suing to get back in?
No names jump off the page at me.
No, I'm saying like if the player is trying to come back into college and they have to go to court over it, who is battling them in court? Is it the NCAA?
It should be.
Because if it is, then let's go to court, baby. We'll bring everybody back from the NFL because it's not going to work out for the NCAA.
So it never does. So I have a basketball question.
Yes.
If you play in the European League, can you play in the NCAA?
You're still a professional.
Right. So, but that's what I'm asking. Like I'm playing over in Europe, I'm playing in Romania, I'm playing in Yugoslavia. Can I go to Clemson and then play, or can I?
Yeah, you can.
You can, right? Yeah, there are guys that.
So like.
That's what he's getting at, is that's the loophole.
It's the loophole. And like, listen, I don't want these guys to be able to come back and play. But what I'm saying is like, that's the problem and that's a challenge. Like that's where the NCAA has got to figure out who is actually eligible. The other challenge you also have, these guys are getting huge NIL contracts. They're not quote unquote employees. They're not professionals. But like, it's so muddied and it sucks. And again, I am not advocating for these guys to be able to go back, you know, they be like Eddie Money and start saying, hey, I want to go back. But like, I'm looking at it from that holistic perspective. And I'm trying to say like, okay, do they really got to lock this out? But like, again, the NCAA has shown time and again, they have an inability to do that.
Well, if nothing else, it worked out for them, right? They brought somebody back from the professional ranks to Alabama, and Florida won the game 100-77.
Did Craig go with Eddie Money?
Yeah, he did.
I saw Eddie Money in concert. I saw Eddie Money unplugged at the Palace of Auburn Hills when I was like 10 years old.
He's a big Eddie Money guy. He's made that reference to that song specifically at least 5 times in the 2 years that we've been running on shows together.
I want to go back.
Our friend John Smith says Alabama's just 2 to 3 more former NBA players away from being able to compete with the best teams in the SEC. Here's the thing. This has become a giant joke, and I get it. And Todd Golden, with all the confidence in the world, says, we'll beat them anyway. And then they did. And I applaud him for his national championship level confidence. Who doesn't want a coach who believes his team is going to win? We're going to talk about that here in just a minute with David Soderquist. Casey, thank you, as always, for bringing the boards for us right here on SEC Sunday night. We'll be right back after this with our friend David Soderquist from High Top Sports.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us, and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team!
This is SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network, proudly presented by Hewitt Diamandouros Law, hdlawsc.com. We are now joined by our good friend David Soderquist, High Top Dave on X. Make sure that you're following along to talk about the Florida Gators. And we are recording a little before the show, so let me just go ahead and say we are live watching Alabama in Gainesville taking on the Gators on the hardwood right now. 12 minutes left in the first half. Florida is up 18-13. We'll get into that in just a moment. Dave, how are you, man? What's going on? Surviving this winter weather and continuing to pull for the Gators. What's going
on? It's kind of crazy when you have a year where, like, I live in North Georgia, but you have a year where, like, some of the other southern states or some of the counties, southern counties in Georgia, and then the southern state of Florida actually gets more snow than you do when you live up in North Georgia. So it's been kind of a weird year for winter weather, and I guess nor'easters or whatever you want to call them. I'm not the weather expert, but it's been pretty interesting of a winter as of late.
Yeah, no doubt. And that kind of, we've talked a lot about how the weather almost informs what season sports wise that we're in, and kind of sets the temperature in our, no pun intended, in our minds about what's supposed to be going on. It doesn't necessarily feel like we are heading down the stretch of SEC basketball season and about to welcome baseball onto the diamond because there's snow on the ground. But nevertheless, a lot has been happening in Gainesville. I want to start here with this basketball team, as obviously Florida comes off a national championship last year. A big matchup, first time that SEC men have been on a Sunday since the 2017-2018 season. And so a rare treat for us today, for many of our Southern friends who are snowed in, to have an SEC men's basketball game here in the middle of the day. Again, as I said before, Florida with a slight edge as it is right now, but obviously a lot of headlines around this game considering the Alabama addition of Charles Bediako, who is coming back from the G League, and we have the legal back and forth of what does this mean? How does this happen? Not really. I would love to get your take on players coming back into the college ranks. But the thing that I love most about it, Dave, is that Todd Golden, in an interview earlier this week, and this has been widely publicized on any and everybody talking about this game, says we'll beat them. And if he plays, we'll beat them anyway. I absolutely love this quote. National championship confidence for the Florida head coach as they go into a big matchup in the SEC race. Your thoughts so far on kind of what this basketball team means in Gainesville?
Yeah, it's real crazy. Coming from a guy that's mainly covered football last year, obviously you get really interested in wanting to watch it because Florida was just on a magical run last year with Walter Clayton and some of those guys who are now gone this year. And you have to reload. Somebody that covers football, man, you really start watching the basketball team just because of all the talk of it and everything, the talk of the town. So it's been pretty eye-opening for me as a football fan to watch basketball and get more intrigued and get more interested into it. But so far, I mean, this basketball team, we went so long in a major sport without winning a national championship. And finally, you know, you get one in basketball and now you're 3 for 3 with football and basketball, something that a lot of schools, I don't even think a school has done recently here. So, you know, adding that into your, I guess, your repertoire or maybe some of the things that you've done as a school really intrigues just a fan base and makes, you know, more of the fans want to come out and watch some of these games. I mean, there's kids camping out just to get to the games so they can fit inside of the basketball stadium. So I don't think I've ever seen that for a while, especially when Mike White was here. But at the end of the day, you know, Florida has been on a magical run. They had to reload this year. Right now, they're leading the nation in the rebounds. You introduced Boogie Flan, Xavier Lee, some of the top two portal additions. You know, they had a little bit of a slow start this year, but now you're starting to slowly see them come on. I mean, Florida has 5 players now in the double figures averaging points, Haw, Condon, Chinlu, Fland, and Lee. So I think that's another surprise too, is Ruben Chinlu, more of your defensive guy. He's starting to add points to the board as well. So, you know, Florida is not just a one-dimensional team when it comes to the offense now. They have multiple guys that can score double digits. And I think that is what, you know, really intrigues this. It makes this year really intriguing is the fact that, like, yeah, you had a kind of a slow start with Boogie and Lee trying to get into a rhythm, but now they're slowly starting to, you know, turn the corner there. And now Florida's starting to make a little bit of a noise now this year.
You absolutely hit the nail on the head, I think, in terms of Xavier Lee and Boogie Fland. You expect somebody who comes off of being the leader of an Arkansas team for Boogie Fland to come in here and kind of take over. Let's be honest. This is a guard-driven game, especially when it gets into the tournament here in just over a month. But they did start slow. There was a very Walter Clayton Jr.-sized hole in this team, and I watched them early in the year against Duke, and it was blatantly obvious that there was going to have to be some shifting of leadership roles and where the scoring is coming from. I think Thomas Houck is the best player on this team, and I think if the game runs through him, obviously you have size with Handlock and with Chinyulu, but Thomas Houck is a guy that I think they can run this offense through, and when he gets going, they obviously can take off. It's a little bit different, I think, than how most teams think in 2026, because it is so guard-driven down the stretch when you get into tournament time. But if he's the guy that needs to have the ball in his hands, then I think that's the way that Todd Golden is going to go, as I'm watching him make a move here. And then a little high-low from Chinyulu down for the bucket. But the biggest thing, you know, you're coming off a big, big win in the middle of the week, an SEC all-time greatest margin of victory against South Carolina in Columbia in the middle of the week last week. And
did
then
the Gamecocks show up?
The jury
is
still.
I'm just asking questions. I am here to keep us fair and make sure we don't get too skewed over here.
Well, what I really thought was funny about that game, and what I really liked about it, is a lot of South Carolina fans were still staying past it and kind of, you know, cheering with some of the Florida people. It was kind of hilarious when you watched the end of the game. You know, when I didn't get to watch the first half of that game, but when I like looked at the score at halftime, I was like, wow.
Okay, Rob didn't watch the second half, so you guys together watched the whole game.
That is correct.
Yeah, and then they wound up winning by what was it, 40 points, 40-plus points? And, 45, yeah. Yeah. So it wound up being a record, I think some Florida record, an SEC record. So
SEC record, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at that game and you're like, okay, wow, you know, where's Florida at now? Are they, you know, we were talking about turning this corner real slow, and then all of a sudden you have a big 45 point dominance over South Carolina. Now, I know South Carolina's not maybe the best basketball team that's out there, but like to score 45 points and have a 45 point differential on somebody is really good.
Well, you know, you mentioned half to half, and this was mentioned on one of the other shows on our network earlier this week on Inside the Gamecocks. If Florida had not scored the entire second half, which you watched, the game would have gone into overtime. So that just tells you the margin of victory that was there. But a lot of momentum heading into this big matchup today, a ranked matchup against Alabama, two teams that are expected to maybe make a run down the stretch. And as I said before, Bediako coming in for Alabama as he takes a 3 from the corner off the top of the backboard here with just under 10 minutes left in the first half. The biggest thing for me, what do you like about the confidence of somebody like Todd Golden saying, it doesn't matter what you throw at us. It doesn't matter if they bring somebody back from the G League. We're going to beat them anyway. Is that your style as someone who covers the Gators? And we can translate this into any sport, right? Do you want a coach who's going to speak out and say something like that? Or does it kind of give you a little bit of pause to say, let's not be cashing those checks just yet?
Yeah, I mean, every coach has their style, obviously. I think in a way, and even I think Alabama's coach said something about it too, didn't really care. And Todd Golden even admitted to himself, he's like, I'm pretty sure their head coach doesn't care about what I said. He's going to bring it, and he's going to want to take our heads off, and we're going to want to do the same thing. So at the end of the day, maybe it fires your team up and makes them want to even play even harder. But at the same time, you're giving Alabama bulletin board material as well for them to play as hard too. So, you know, you really got to step your game up now, because those guys are going to want to come for your head, and they're going to want to, you know, in the post game say, yeah, I remember Todd Golden said this, but we did this, and we showed him who was boss. So, you know, in a way, I guess, like, it's not really kind of, I guess you could say it's kind of my style. Spurrier was kind of that way as well, with the kind of, like, you know, the cocky, I guess, arrogant comments, but also at the same time, you know, I feel that Todd Golden's just very confident in his team and in the way that they've played down the stretch. And, but yeah, I mean, great bulletin board for material for Alabama, because it's just going to make them play just as harder.
I feel like that is a new age of college sports, though, and even professional sports, where bulletin board material now is almost like the standard. You know, it used to be like very vanilla, you know, don't put anything out there. And now you've got teams, I think of like TCU is probably the best at trolling in college football. I don't know what the hell they're doing half the time, but I think it's fantastic. And I love that energy and that confidence that Todd Golden has come through. He's not worrying about mining the G League for it. He's got his own players. And I think it's been that spark that's helped to light Florida. I got to ask you about Mr. Summerall, because I know Mr. Summerall has been there. Yeah. What is that relationship? Has there been much of a relationship there? I know Summerall's been to a lot of the games. He's got the Florida on there, no logo there. But talk a little bit about our guy, John Summerall.
Yeah, the guy was passing out pizzas for people waiting in line today for the game. So, yeah, he's a man of the people. John Summerall is a very night and day version from what we used to have in Billy Napier. Billy Napier was more your reserved kind of, you know, just straightforward business kind of guy. Didn't really, you know, say much of anything and was just all about business, right? Now, Summerall is very intense. He's very real. He's very, you know, urgent about everything that he does. I mean, when he came in and his first presser that he ever had when he got hired, he said, look, I got a 5-year plan. He's like, but I don't want to win in 5 years. I don't want to win in 5 months. He goes like, I want to win right now. So, and I think you're starting to kind of see the urgency from John Summerall, because I mean, this transfer portal season, usually Billy in the portal moved really slow. We used to like tweet out like sloth gifts with Billy Napier, because like he would always want tape and measurements. He would look at all this stuff, and we'd wind up getting like 2 or 3 guys out of the portal, and we could have got like 20 or whatever. John Summerall came straight in here, and we had like 40 visits from the portal, and we got the guys, a lot of the guys from Georgia Tech that, you know, was in Buster Faulkner's system. And, you know, Stockton was a guy that was one of their main targets last year, Georgia Tech's offense. He comes over from Georgia Tech. You get one of the offensive linemen from Georgia Tech there as well. And you get Aaron Filo, a guy that, you know, it doesn't, on a star level, he doesn't like bust the charts or anything like that. If you go by high school, he broke a lot of passing records in high school. He had consistent 4,000 yard seasons with 60-70% completion ratings. That's something you like to see from a quarterback. It's pretty hard to do no matter what the competition is. He was in Buster Faulkner's system for 2 years. He comes over there from Georgia Tech. You get rid of DJ Lagway. He goes out there to Baylor. So it's going to look like a different team. It's definitely going to look like a different offense with Buster Faulkner. And, you know, that guy obviously is a guy that if you listen to an interview, I think he had an interview with either Scott Carter or I believe it was somebody. I can't remember who it was, but I listened to the interview. It was Sean Kelly. And he talked about, you know, switching up the offense, switching up plays. He goes with the flow of the game, right? Mm-hmm. And he doesn't let you know what's coming. And I think what Florida was missing was everything was predictable on offense when Billy Napier was here, right? I mean, I think I heard a Miami coach after they beat us 41-17 2 years ago and said, we knew every play that they were going to throw at us. And Miami wound up having one of the worst defenses that year with Cam Ward, right? But they had a really good offense, but their defense wasn't blocking anything. So, you know, you score 17 points against one of the worst defenses in the league. Like, you know, that shows how much of an offensive prowess you have and how much predictability that you have in your offense. So I think, you know, bringing in Buster Faulkner, you know, is super exciting for Florida Gator fans. And I don't know, man, like Summerall just seems like a guy that wants to win. He's very real. You know, bringing in Phil Troutwine there as well. I mean, we've got a lot of good additions O-line wise and assistance wise that I think that Florida, can definitely turn around their team and get more wins this season. It's just how many wins do they get? How immediate is it? And look, he's going to have some time to do it as well. And I think, you know, eventually as they start seeing the results and, you know, bringing over these guys that you did from the transfer portal, I think a lot of those boosters with NIL will probably step up and probably donate some more money too.
Yeah, and I think every time he said Buster Faulkner, I was flinching. I was like,
I'm sorry.
Look, what, I was thinking about like what could have been in the RPOs and you know, all the good stuff. I think that is an interesting part. I think Buster Faulkner, everybody knows my love for him and what he does in the RPO game. DJ Lagway is gone. I think that's probably the best thing for both sides. I just it just didn't seem like that was going to be a good fit. It gives everybody a fresh start. Whether you get a fresh start in Baylor, that's another show. We won't worry about that here. I did also love the fact that you guys brought in Eric Singleton. That was another guy that I was hoping the Dogs would bring in. So I think he's going to be effective. My question, you know, I think the big question still becomes, you know, that was the question under Billy, is the quarterback. You know, you've got Aaron Filo, who was there for 2 years at Georgia Tech. Can he be that guy? He's got some nice pieces in the backfield. He's going to have some nice wide receivers out there, but it's going to be able to, can Buster Faulkner get him up to speed, get him ready so that Florida can be clicking? Because when the Florida Gators are successful, they're scoring in bunches and they're putting up the points on the board.
Yeah, and I think having Jaden Ball back there in the backfield definitely helps as well and alleviate some of the pressure off the quarterback, you know, rushing for 1170 last year. That quarterback position is something we discussed on High Top a lot. It's like, okay, you bring in Aaron Filo, but like if you look at college quarterback experience just on field, there's really not a lot, right? Aaron Filo played sparingly in Georgia Tech, and he had to come in at some points for Haynes King, but he didn't really play that much. Now, he had a good bit of amount of reps, and he's been in the system for 2 years, but how much does he really translate to the college level in the SEC? We're going to find that out, I guess, this season. But behind him, you have Tremell Jones, you have Bailey, you have Warner, not a lot of quarterbacks with a lot of college experience. I think that's one of the worries that Florida fans have right now is, you know, is this guy the right choice? And if he is, can he stay healthy? Because if he can't stay healthy, then you're having to rely on a sophomore in Tremell Jones. You're having to rely on an experienced quarterback in Harrison Bailey. I'll say that he is experienced, but obviously, you know, he's had his struggles. He can't make it on the starting depth chart at other places as well. Really good kid though. Love the kid to death. We've interviewed him, had him on High Top. But you know, when you look at that quarterback room, that is the general worry consensus from the Florida fan standpoint. But the good thing is you brought in Evan Pryor as well as a backup running back to Jane Baugh, guy that's averaged 6 to 7 yards per rush. He can run a 4.4, 4.3. He's one of those guys that if he gets an open space, he can take it to the house. Baugh's more of your bruiser running back. He's going to be able to take hits. He can juke really well. He's your bruiser guy that, you know, if the offensive line's struggling, he's going to get you those tough yards. So I think that's a good 1-2 combo on those two running backs. And you bring in the running back from ECU as well, and he's a guy that, you know, shown on special teams, he can take it to the house too. So I think Florida did really good in the running back room as well, as opposed to the quarterback room. So I think those three running backs that you know, Filo or whoever's going to be the starter, we're assuming Filo will be as the season starts, he's going to have a plethora of guys back there to help him out in certain situations if he is struggling.
It's SEC Sunday Night here with David Soderquist, High Top Sports, talking to the Florida Gators as we see Thomas Houck go up top to Alex Condon for the alley-oop, and Florida now with a 28-25 lead, just under 7 minutes in the first half. David, you talked a little bit through the offensive roster there, and if you look at the success that Florida has had over the course of their history, we've seen two coaches on offense who have really had a breakout experience in Gainesville, and that would be obviously Steve Spurrier and Urban Meyer. When you look at the construction of this offense, I never liked the hire of Billy Napier because I thought it was going to slow them down. His style is just going to slow things down too much there, and it needs to move a little more quickly in Gainesville, it seems like, and utilize those Florida athletes. But when we talk about roster construction, it's a different conversation in 2026 because now we have to talk about money, and we need a GM in a lot of places. And so the money that was paid out to Jaden Ball, who you mentioned, who was just under 1,200 yards last year and is going to be an asset to that offense this year, how did you guys feel about the money that was allocated there at the running back position, which we often see is a position of you know, where you're going to – they're a dime a dozen and you're going to get a guy for maybe a cheaper price. Was there any sentiment that maybe, hey, we could use some of this money to go add some additional pieces, or was everybody kind of on board with going all in on Jaden Ball?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of people that were scared. We were going to lose Wilson. We were going to lose Ball. We were going to lose, you know, Jaden Woods, who entered the portal there as well. So I think that you should allocate a lot of your money to retaining players because there is tampering and there is offers being thrown everywhere. Texas tried really hard to get Jaden Ball. There were some other schools there as well. But I think Jaden Ball is just a Florida guy. He loves the University of Florida. Obviously, he got a pay raise, one heck of a pay raise after last year. But when it comes to certain positions, I know just talking to the Monks, the concessions of Florida Gator fans, that they probably wish they added a little bit more O-line, maybe a little bit more D-line. But, you know, if you're a coaching staff and they feel confident in your O-line and your D-line and the depth that they have, then, I mean, by all means, just so be it. But I think, you know, it is important to retain your players in this day and age. But I also think you should, you know, as a NIL, I guess, company or however you disperse those funds to also be able to, you know, fund stuff for new players in the portal each year. Cause now you're really starting to see where people are starting to go back on like offering a bunch of money to these five-star high school quarterbacks, because we can just go into the portal and get an experienced guy and we already know what he can do. And it's worth them spending the money because you don't have any questions there. Right now you find a guy that's a five-star quarterback in high school and he's just lighting up scoreboards, looks really well, maybe like a Will Greer type from, you know, that's just, I'm just throwing that out there because I'm a Florida fan. You know, maybe you go after a guy like that. But I think you're slowly starting to see now a lot of teams waiting till portal time to bring in an experienced quarterback if that's what they need. I mean, Miami does that a lot. I don't think we always make the joke that Miami doesn't develop high school quarterbacks, right? But I mean, they're going to the portal and getting the best guy out of the portal every single year. At least they know what they're getting out of that quarterback. So, you know, I think you're starting to see more of the guys in the transfer portal start to get more established players because they're probably worth the money as just guessing to see if somebody in high school is going to be the guy.
Yep. And, you know, Craig is a big fan of Miami's quarterback strategy as well, as that did very well for them this year, getting one of the
most David and I were high-fiving that last pass by Carson.
Hey,
I mean, we both were shocked. I mean, I think there were tears running down our face. We're like, I can't believe it. Our poor Carson.
What'd you expect?
That's it. Hey, David, thanks a lot for being with us. I just wanted to give you a chance before we get out of here.
Okay.
Any big hot take? We are officially closed on 2025, and we're going to 2026. Do you have a bold prediction or anything for us? We'll get you in a little early next week. We're gonna talk about some big bold predictions, and Craig and I are gonna hint at a few of them tonight as well. So you tell me anything Florida related that you think is gonna happen in 2026?
I think they'll make a playoff. Schedule's a lot easier.
There it is.
Bringing in a new offensive mindset. Defense is still gonna be good. We'll see.
I got one for David. Ready? The Florida Gators will be in the Final Four. Not for college football. Women's college lacrosse. The Gators
there we
come
go.
In at number four. Preseason number four. There we go. See?
There we go. See? Hey, we're in the Final Four or something, right?
Leave it, Craig. Leave it to our resident lax bro to find a way to bring us back around to lacrosse. David Soderquist, High Top Sports. Dave, thanks so much for being with us. As always, wonderful stuff. This is SEC Sunday Night, and we'll be right back after this.
Thanks, y'all.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team.
Oh, man. The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
Yo, what's up? Baby, let's go!
This is SEC Sunday Night on the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network, proudly presented by Hewitt Domodiros Law. I want to say thanks again to David Soderquist for being here with us this week. Dave always has great stuff. Craig, I think the biggest thing for me outside of the basketball stuff we were talking about, I'll give credit to J.C. Sherbert, who always pointed out that the big-time offenses at Florida run, and that's been Spurrier and Meyer, wasn't ever going to be a thing with Billy Napier. There was not going to be a high flying offense. Nope. I'm really interested to see with your boy Buster Faulkner down there what this looks like, because it's, I wouldn't exactly call it high flying in this case either, but I do expect them to move the ball a little better than they did under Napier. Very interesting set of circumstances in Gainesville, which brings us, Craig, to a really fun game that I have for us tonight called Lock It or Leave It. It is time for us to get into some bold takes, should we say, or some hot might be a little bit of a stretch, but we'll go with it. We'll go with it. And yeah, it's time to get into that type of stuff. We know that next week, I'll take the opportunity to let everybody know that we will be on Monday night. I'll say that again, Monday night, the 9th, not Sunday the 8th, because we will like you, be watching the Super Bowl. We don't often do this. As Craig said, we've been together for 2 years. We're heading into year three this week. We've done over 100 shows. We try not to move things and stay consistent with you guys, but we are going to move it next week, and we will have Brad Crawford with us. We're working on another guest as well. And as we get ready for that, we're going to continue to talk some of these hot takes, but I wanted to talk a few of them with you tonight, Craig. First of all, we're going to play this game, Lock It or Leave It. If you want to lock it in, then you're predicting this thing is going to happen. If you want to leave it, then you're going to just leave it where it lays. You're not picking it up. You're not taking it with you. You're not putting your money on it. You got it?
You ready, Rob? And I have not been previewed to the questions, so this is true radio. That's
exactly how we like it. Yep. Number one, the SEC will get six teams into the playoff in 2026. Half the field, Craig.
Leave it.
Why? Why
the SEC will get five teams, and five teams will go in the playoff, not six. Six is too many. I think there's too much in the Big Ten and Big 12. Look out for Oklahoma State, Houston, and Texas Tech.
Okay, yeah, I would set that over under right there where it was before at 5.5. So I had to pick one to kind of make you choose a side or one way or the other. But I agree with you actually on this one too. I would leave that as well. I do think that there's a good shot at five again. What we have noted multiple times, and one of the things that we'll talk about with Brad, is that talent being dispersed has not made the SEC worse. It's just less top-heavy.
Yep.
And that's kind of where we're at. Okay, number two, three SEC teams who did not make the playoff in 2025 will make it in 2026.
I'm going to say there's going to be two.
And those two would be?
Texas, and
come on, this is a layup.
LSU.
Yeah. Okay, so those are the two expected teams. I would say if anybody's going to lay down expectations, it's going to be Texas and LSU. Are there any sleepers that might could push for that is the question in my mind. Are there any sleepers that could push to be that third team? Is there anybody following the Indiana blueprint? I've seen lots of Indiana blueprint models out there this week, Craig. Everybody wants to be a hot take artist, and I guess it would be hypocritical of me to call them out because here we are with a segment that I designed to conjure up hot takes. But teams like Kentucky, teams like South Carolina continue to land on these Indiana blueprint type lists where teams look and say, do they have some veteran talent or were they able to bring in some veteran talent? You look around this league, who else didn't make it from the SEC this year? Texas A&M made it in. Oklahoma made it in. What about Missouri, Craig? What about Drink? Does he have the pieces bringing back that backfield, adding Austin Simmons? Does he have the pieces to run the gamut? Always a lighter schedule. Shout out to our friend Maggie Johnson. Always a lighter schedule in Como. Can Drink make his way into the playoff? Could there be three teams this year, Craig? What about Florida? We just talked about it with David Soderquist. Can I make an argument for John Sumrall and the Gators with the talent they've brought in?
What about Auburn? So Alex Golsh is catching all sorts of hell on the plains. I feel like people are about ready to riot with what's going on.
Shocker.
I know it's crazy. Not but
Auburn.
I'd like to see what happens at Auburn. I'm gonna stick with Texas and LSU. I think those are more for sure things.
All righty. Number three. There were six teams in the SEC, Craig, who were under 500 in 2025. Those teams are Arkansas, Auburn, Kentucky, Florida, Mississippi State, and South Carolina. In 2026, three of them get to at least 7-5. So I'll read them again for you. I'll read them again for you. You tell us which of those three or more, Arkansas, Auburn, Kentucky, Florida, Hail State, and South Carolina, which three or more will get to 7-5?
I think Florida for sure. Florida for sure. Give me Kentucky. And give me the boys in Columbia, the Gamecocks.
You know, you pointed this out, I think, in our conversation that people are going to see with Brad later. But I'll just make the point that if these under 500 teams elevate, someone else has to come down.
Yes.
And so I did not tee up the backside of this question to say who's going to decrease for these guys to increase. Some of this is a little bit of non-con. Right. Mm-hmm. Some of these games can be like Florida dropping a game to USF last year. That could be one they could steal that doesn't impact the SEC schedule if they don't lose a game like that again in 2026. So obviously, South Carolina losing to Clemson at the end of the year is an opportunity for that team to get a non-conference win. Kentucky and Louisville, Florida and Florida State, that was a game that Florida was able to handle this year. But there are some games in here. Auburn started the year against Baylor and won that game, but some non-SEC games that could swing this one way or the other. But for the most part, this is going to be, especially with a 9-game slate, this is going to be a situation where in order to get to 7-5, you're going to have to tear somebody else down in the league that you're in. Okay. Last two, we're going to step outside of your comfort zone here, and we're going to get outside of football for just a minute.
Going to lacrosse.
That's not exactly where we're going. Number four, the SEC gets shut out of the Elite Eight in the NCAA basketball tournament. No teams will make it. We've talked at length kind of about the depth of the SEC. No way that they could live up to the height of last year with 14 teams into the tournament. Florida caps it off by winning the whole thing. It's just unprecedented what they did. You're going to obviously see a drop-off this year. I still think the SEC is a great basketball conference, and you can make a strong argument for them being at the top. But much like we've said about football, the dispersion of talent this year, everybody seems to be good. Like, there's a lot of good teams in the SEC. Yep. Maybe not a lot of great ones, but tournament basketball is different, Craig. Does somebody get hot, or are they all gone by the time we get to eight?
Chop, chop, chop. I'm going to leave that take, and Florida will find their way to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I can make a strong argument there as well. And the other one that I have my eye on, we've talked about week in and week out here, is going to be Arkansas. Now, they took one on the chin against Kentucky, and maybe we should be talking about Kentucky. Maybe we should be talking about Rick Barnes in Tennessee. Like I said, we don't know. Maybe we should be talking about Buckyball making a run.
Maybe we should be talking about the Dogs.
Exactly. And any of these teams could get hot at the right time. But if I have to bet on one, it's gonna be Cal, because he's kind of been there, done that, and he's got the pieces in place. All right, lastly, Craig, I said it wasn't time for baseball yet here, but as we look ahead, baseball does get going here and very, very soon in the SEC, and it's going to be time for us to look at one of those sports that the greatest conference in all of college athletics continues to dominate, and it does indeed dominate. Maybe not in the way that it dominates college softball, which we'll tip our caps to as well, but LSU gets it done last year in the College World Series against Coastal Carolina. I was right there on the grandstand as we talked to Jake Crane right after that game, and we were able to kind of look at the results there and look at some college football stuff with him. In 2026, are you going to put your money on an SEC team to win the College World Series or take the field and everybody else?
It just means more for one reason. I'm locking it in with an SEC team. Playing an SEC team in the national championship.
Oh, he's doubling down, a lock it in championship matchup between SEC teams. So we're going to leave six teams in the playoff, not taking that one. We're going to leave three new SEC teams in the playoff that didn't go in last year, but we're locking in three or more elevating out of that sub-500 zone. We're locking in. Or we're leaving the SEC getting shut out of the Elite Eight and taking Florida, and I'm taking Arkansas, and we're gonna lock in SEC team wins the College World Series. All right, friends and family, it's been a good one here. We have a big game coming up next week, the Super Bowl. Before we get out of here, Craig, you want to make a prediction? Who's going to win the Super Bowl? Tons of SEC players, by the way. Just absolutely loaded. I looked at the rosters last week. You have a total of 44 players, 22 for each team in this Super Bowl, and about 30 of those players are on the active roster, not practice squad or IR or something like that. So a lot of SEC rings going to be dispersed after next Sunday night. But if you have to pick one right now as it stands, the Super Bowl, for those of you who are college fans only, this is kind of the event of the year in sports. Dominates every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the line is Seattle by 4.5. That game is 6:30 on NBC.
Is that the over-under of Drake May interceptions and fumbles?
It is not. It is not.
All right. Well, I am going with the Seahawks to win. I just think Drake May is going to cause too many issues and problems for your Patriots, and Seattle will win their first Super Bowl.
They got one against Peyton and the Broncos in the year before Malcolm Butler picked off Russell Wilson at the goal line and gave the Patriots yet another one in the trophy case. 4.5-point favorites, Seattle. I'm going against my head, and I'm going with my heart. The Patriots get it done, and the dynasty returns to New England. Bring that Lombardi back to where it belongs, baby. This has been SEC Sunday Night here with you every single week and proudly presented by Hewitt Domodoros Law. He's Craig McMichael. I am Rob Williams, and we'll see you next Monday night for SEC Sunday Night. You guys have a great week. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and we'll see you next time.